Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery. And that is why the Machinery Digest exists. A no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello, my friends, and welcome to Idle Chatter. I'm Ray Bohax, your host, and I just want to thank you so much for listening again today or this week, whenever you happen to click into this. Then I just want you to know that I sincerely appreciate everyone that listens, and we've been blessed at this early stage of the show to have listeners from around the world. Predominantly, as I always say, Canada and the United States and then Canada, but we have a lot of people over in Europe, England and Ireland that listened, a couple of people down in Australia and New Zealand, so that's wonderful, and I am nothing at all without you, and I mean that sincerely, that I never want you to think that I take your time listening to the ramblings of this New Jersey dryland farmer for granted, and it's a blessing to me, and I just want to thank you. I want to thank you so much, and for anyone that is new listening, I want to welcome you aboard, and I ask you to also please reference my website, and that is farmmachinerydigest.com, and that goes for you old listeners also, not that any of you are old, but there's a wealth of data up there that I feel would really bring a value to you in your operation, and it is, the podcast is like the bacon and eggs, the show is like the eggs, and the website is like the bacon, and you really need to use both of them to get a full education and to make your farm operation more efficient. Well, I was like, you wouldn't be a farmer, right, if you didn't talk about crops and weather and everything before the show starts. So that's always the basis of everything that we revolve around. So the weather today is actually quite nice. I'm going to look out the window right now. My office is in the basement of the farmhouse, and I could stick my head up in the sky. It looks nice and blue, beautiful blue sky with not a cloud in it, which is a rarity for this year as it is. For so many places in the country, but we don't really have a lot of heat units. It's only like 60 something degrees, and this morning was 47 degrees. Yesterday was 49 degrees, and it's been cool. And the high for the day yesterday was only like 65, so it's 2 degrees warmer now than it was yesterday. And this is probably, it's about 11 o'clock, 10:55 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So I'm hoping for some heat units to push that corn. I have three plantings in, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. The first planting is up pretty nicely. Way slow. It was planted on May 18th. The second one was planted. I have my planting dates right here on my desk with 10 zillion other papers. The second planting was May 25th, and the third planting was June 1st. So the first and second plantings, the first planting is up, the second planting is starting to come up, and obviously the June 1st one is not up yet because today is only June 3rd. I believe it's the 3rd, or 4th, 4th. Okay, whatever, one day off. It's election day here in Warren County in New Jersey, primary election, so I got to go vote after this. But anyway, what I would like to share a farmer story with you, and I'm not laughing, I guess I am chuckling, because if you didn't chuckle, you would cry. But this past Saturday, June 1st, I wanted to put my third planting of sweet corn in. And as I always say, out of respect to new people, we're fresh market sweet corn growers, so I have to do multiple plantings. I try to get between 10 in with a minimum of 8. And so they have to be timed out so that we could feed our customers. It's not like there's a processing plant and we could go and just give everything to them at one time. So I was excited about getting into the field. There was one section of the field that was wetter than I had hoped for, but I said, geez, I just won't go there. And we use a three-point hitch planter because our fields are small and they have a lot of obstacles, and we don't put in much sweet corn. We put in about 10 acres of sweet corn, but we hand-pick, as I've told you before, so that 10 acres, when you're hand-picking, looks like 1,000. But anyway, so the water drains from the mountain to this one section of the field. It's not a large section. It's maybe 20 feet by 30, if even that. So, but it's right where I would begin the row. So I said to myself, all right, well, I walked the field first and felt the soil and prodded around in there and said, I think I could, you know, go get in here pretty well without doing any damage, and I just need to not go where it's wet and just leave that unplanted and be done with it. So that's what I did. So to make a long story short, because that's not what this show is about, my planting mishaps, but this past Saturday, June 1st, if Corn Warriors were here filming, it would look like a comedy routine. It would look like the Keystone Cops or the Three Stooges, and I was all three of the Stooges. Well, this is what happened in rapid succession on that day. Number one, at one particular point, one of the liquid fertilizer tubes got plugged with mud. So there's one row with, I don't know when it happened, but one row without any 2x2 fertilizer, and I just hate that, you know. And when something like that happens, like something happens to the plant when you miss a section, or the fertilizer doesn't come out, or whatever, or if you get a rock in the closing wheels and something messes it up, you could have a whole big field full of corn that looks gorgeous, but it's like a dent on a car. When you look at that field, all you see is that area where you screwed it up. So God knows what this one row is going to look like, and I don't know, honestly, when it plugged. So that was the first thing. The second thing was that I use a small electric transfer pump to transfer, because we're doing small acreage, and I don't want a lot of weight on the planter or on the tractor, so I use a small electric transfer pump to go and bring my 2x2 agro liquid fertilizer into my planter. So I filled up the planter before I went in the field to plant. Obviously didn't use as much fertilizer as I thought because the one tube got plugged. But anyway, I said, I'm going to now fill it back up again, because this way I'll be ready and put the planter away and be ready for the next planting in 4 or 5 days. So when I first went out, I filled it up in the morning. Everything worked beautifully. Go out, plant, come back. It's okay, let me fill it up. Take the planter off the tractor, and then I want to spray, because we use a three-point hitch sprayer. Go to plug the pump in, and the pump starts to pump for about 10 seconds, and all of a sudden, the pitch changes, and I smell something. I go, ah! And I feel the heat. The plug, the one terminal on the plug, burned up. And so thank God I was standing there, and this Chinese stuff, I'll tell you, is unbelievable. It's just junk. And I wish I could buy an American-made quality transfer pump. So now I had to stop everything. Thank God there was not more damage. I didn't know whether the motor seized or what have you, and that's why the plug burned up. It didn't pop a circuit breaker. It worked perfectly an hour before that. So anyway, I mean, it started fine when I plugged it in, so who knows. So went to town, got a plug, changed the plug on it. The pump works now. Now, mind you, this is not 5 minutes. You all know what that's about. So you go to town, put everything away, whatever, and then come back and say, okay, fine, put the plug on the pump. The plug works fine. Everything works good. It's now 5 o'clock in the afternoon. This started at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So I said, well, I got the sprayer on. Let me fill the sprayer up. And I wanted to burn off my last field of cover crop and then put down my liquid fertilizer, my broadcast liquid fertilizer. I broadcast a mixture of 20 gallons per acre of agro liquid high energy N, 10 gallons per acre of 32%, so I have something that comes available right away, because the agro liquid high in GN is a slow release product. And then I also had in that tote the agro liquid, I think it's called C-Tech, their carbon product for my broadcast. So I do that, put the pump in there. Everything is working beautifully. Got the sprayer set up. Everything is good, beautiful. The sprayer is filled up. I'm going to go out there, and I put my Roundup in there. So I was going to burn off my cover crop, and I was going to put my liquid fertilizer down in one pass. Beautiful, right? 5 o'clock. It's okay, fine. Take me a couple hours to do this field. The days are long. 7 o'clock, I'll be done. My wife is not home. I'll be done at home. She went shopping. Be done. Put the tractor away. Everything before she comes home. So I go out in the field, set everything up, measure my height from my sprayer tips, 20 inches off the ground, because they're 20 inches separated. Make one pass, make two passes, make the third pass. All of a sudden, boom! I said, "What the heck is that?" You know, when something happens, like that, you don't know what's going on. And then my cover crop was quite high. It was probably about 4.5 feet high. And at the end of the field, near the tree line, a branch fell off and got speared into the ground, and it was in there really hard and deep, and it was quite thick, and I couldn't see with the cover crop. It grabbed the suction line from the tank to the pump and ripped everything out. I had a whole tank. I mean, it was after the valve, so I couldn't shut it off. I got the liquid fertilizer, the Roundup going all over the place. I did this to myself. I saw what happened. At first, you got to figure out what happened, because I heard the noise, and I felt a little jerk in the tractor, but it was nothing. I thought I ran over a twig or something, a little branch. So that busted up. So basically, in essence, in one day, I went and I plugged the liquid fertilizer tube on one row of the planter, burned the plug off the transfer pump, and busted the heck out of the sprayer. So but I got some seed in the ground, right? So that's all that counts. But, you know, hey, we all like to share these war stories, because we know that that's what farming is about. But, you know, it also builds faith. And, you know, it's challenging at the time, and you get disgusted. And, you know, you're going to look at that field, and you're going to see those rows that aren't as green as the others or as tall. But that should be just a reminder of not things that happen, but how we just need to keep our eyes focused on the Lord. And, you know, in the book of Jeremiah, it tells us, and I will read it, "Blessed is the man that trusteth in the Lord, and whose hope the Lord is." So as farmers, and given all the weather conditions and problems that are going on around the country, some floods, some droughts, I know up in Canada they're still having a terrible drought, and parts of the southern United States is a terrible drought. Other areas are so far underwater that you have a fish farm. So, but we need to trust in the Lord. And as I always say, and I know that the little obstacles that I went through the other day are absolutely nothing compared to what other people are going through. And but if we just give it over to God, and you know, maybe He doesn't want some crops in the ground this year. I don't know. And whatever it is, but for those who believe in Him and trust in Him, the Scriptures tell us He promises, and He cannot break His word. He promises that He will provide for us everything we need. So, hey, I got the planter, I got the sprayer, I got the planter tube cleaned out. I got the sprayer parts ordered. And it's a crop care sprayer. It's made out in Pennsylvania. Beautiful, beautiful company. Got everything ordered. That's supposed to come tomorrow. I'm going to put, God willing, put some more seed in the ground tomorrow. My transfer pump should be working fine with my new plug on it, and we're ready to roll, right? So that's basically where we're at. But listen, thank you for letting me spend so much time telling you about my week, and hopefully, God willing, you had a better week than that. But what I do want to talk to you about is, we're going to talk about carbon deposits today on the show. And, you know, there used to be a show on television on RFD. It was called Out of the Land by Dr. Larry Butler. And you could still find it on YouTube if you do a Google search, an internet search. I don't like Google, but whatever, Google search, even though I use it. But you do a search for Out on the Land, and the old episodes are up there. Excuse me, I just hit the microphone. But That was I learned so much from Dr. Larry Butler, and it was sad that the show, I think, was on for a few years on RFD, and the cost of production was just way too high, and he just couldn't keep it going. But it is all up there on the internet, and you know, he just does a wonderful job of bringing things together, and also taking a one part of, let's say, he's a retired NRCS agent. So he's very much into soils and the plants and plant physiology and what have you. But he takes something and he explains it in a very simplistic way that you could grab hold of. So, you know, following Dr. Larry Butler's theme, what I want to do is, we've spoken about fuel injection, we've spoken about other things in other shows, but I want to take it to a more in-depth level today. And there's merit to this, because you need to understand this. You don't need to be able to design it, as I always say, but you need to understand it and how it relates to the way your machinery operates. So today is actually going to be a two-folded double hitter, double feature, you say in movies, not double hitter. A double feature is that we're going to talk about injectors and we're going to talk about carbon deposits. So we're going to talk about injectors and gasoline and diesel engines, and we're also going to talk about carbon deposits in gasoline and diesel engines and why it is important for you to understand that, just like Dr. Larry Butler would explain different things on his show about soil structure or how roots grow or how nutrient uptake on a plant. So I'm really looking forward to this, because I'm going to take the opportunity, as it comes up from this time on in the history of Idle Chatter, to now to start to take my audience to a higher level. Maybe go revisit some things that we discussed back maybe 20 shows ago, because I think this is show number 45, 20 shows ago, and then really do a deep dive into that and use the previous shows as a foundation. So hopefully you like that, and then we're obviously going to be, I'm going to be introducing new subjects as we go along every week. So, but you know, I told you one story, now I'm going to ask you for another story. Bear with me for another story. I told you about my Keystone Cops farming adventure last Saturday. But, you know, I'm a member of the International Motoring Press Association. That's the organization for automotive journalists. And every year in New York City, our farm is only like 75 miles from New York City. Every year in New York City at the Jacob Javits Center, they have the New York Auto Show, which is a very, very large auto show. People come from around the world and whatever to go to the show. And what they do is that the first day of the show is called Press Day. So you need press pass to get in, which I do have through IMPA, International Motoring Press Association, and it's not open to the public. So it's just open to press people. Excuse me. And then what the auto companies do is they put on a gala event. They have catered food at almost every booth. I don't want to say every booth, but the bigger car companies or the more fancy ones, they have a lot of stuff. They may have, it's music playing. It's almost like a commodity classic evening thing, if you've ever been to that. But everything is in the actual show floor, so they'll have some kind of chef there. So you may say, okay, Cadillac has this chef making something. Then there's a lot of pomp and circumstance as far as that's concerned. And then oftentimes, more often than not, the head executives from the car companies are there, the chief, the top people. So let's say it would be Mary Barra from General Motors and whoever is the head of Ford now, I don't remember. So what have you, and there used to be the gentleman who died from Fiat Chrysler, Marchionne. I forgot what his first name is. So anyway, you get to meet these people and they hobnob with you. Then they have marketing people, and they have also lots of times they'll have engineers there. And why I go to the press day is because you have free rein to go to see all the vehicles. So if something is up on a display, you're allowed to climb up on the display or on a turnstile. They put steps there. You could open the door and look in the car and sit in what have you, whereas that would be off limits to the public. But the reason why I truly like it is because I could talk with the engineers. Because I'm not interested in getting, you know, having the free meal, whatever, I'll eat it, but that's not really what I go for. And I could talk with the engineers, like I could get the lowdown with the engineers on the product and their concepts and what they did, all right? And, you know, That's what brings great, great value to me. And what I want to ask you to do is check your calendar and see what you're doing on August 13th and 14th, because that is the 2 days that the Agro Expo in St. John's, Michigan is going on. And, you know, just like me going to the auto show and being able to talk with the engineers, because you go the other days, they got some kind of media guy there. He doesn't know a tire from a connecting rod, and he's got some kind of speech or something that he tells you or what have you, and you really get no value from it whatsoever. So, but the Agro Expo is like me going to the auto show for press day, but it's for us, it's for the farmers, all right, and it's in St. John's, Michigan. And, you know, there's many, many highlights there, and I will talk to it between now and then. I'll talk about it every week on the show to let you know about it. But, I mean, for instance, there's 95 different corn hybrids at to date with 21 different treatments on them. You know, they got infield demos of sprayers, they got drones, remote sensing technologies, the things, the meat and potatoes, where the steel meets the soil type of stuff in agriculture. And it's an education event, and that's why I like it so much. But what I really, really enjoy with the Agro Expo is the fact that I could connect with the Agro Liquid people. And, you know, most of these field days are the emphasis on row crops. And I understand that, because row crops are predominantly the majority of agriculture, row crops. But, you know, there's other crops, and there's other opportunities in different crops, or there's opportunities in other crops, I should say, more succinctly. And that's what I like about it, because I could go there. I mean, I'm a sweet corn grower. Very few places talked about sweet corn. But you could go there and you could learn about vegetables. You could learn about orchards. You could learn about vineyards. You could learn about nuts and even coffee. Not that you're going to grow coffee in Illinois, but the fact of the matter is Agro Liquid even deals with coffee growers in Hawaii. So really, as the market starts to change, we don't know if all of us are going to be in row crops moving forward. All right, we may not be, but we may want to look for opportunities in other areas of agriculture, and that is a great place to go. Obviously, in a field day, they're not going to have a nut tree there, all right, or a coffee plant. But you have, just like I have the access to the engineers at the auto show, you have the access to the experts, like Dr. Jerry Wilm from Agro Liquid, to talk about the possibilities and what needs to be done as far as fertility is for your farm to move into other crops. And to me, that brings fantastic value. So listen, check it out. It's the Agro Expo. It's free. Go on their website, check it all out, and hopefully I will see you there. Alrighty, let's start to talk about injectors. Now, the purpose of an injector, be it gasoline or diesel, and there's going to be overlap between this, so I will first talk about gasoline, and then I will talk about diesel, and at one particular point I'm going to go back and forth, and I may say this applies to both, alright? But what we need to understand is that fuel, diesel fuel or gasoline, is a hydrocarbon-based product. So it's based on carbon, hydrogen and carbon, hydrocarbon product. And then the purpose of an injector, and we're going to discuss gasoline first, the purpose of an injector is not only to supply fuel to the engine, but is to atomize the fuel. And what atomization means is it takes the liquid fuel and it breaks it into very small particles. So if you were to take an aerosol can and hold the aerosol can up, I don't care what it is in there, all right, and you spray it out into the atmosphere, there's liquid in the can because if you shake it, you could feel a liquid. And then what is that it through pressure and through an orifice, it breaks it into very small particles, but it is still in liquid form. So the job of the fuel injector is to atomize the fuel, because liquid fuel will not burn. And three things need to happen to gasoline for it to be able to combust. It needs to, for it to be able to accept the arcing of the spark plug to combust. It needs to be atomized, which means broken into small particles, but is still in liquid form, and needs to be emulsified, which means mixed with air, and then it needs to go from a liquid form to a gaseous state, what's called a rarefied form, and convert to a gas, not gasoline, a gaseous state, a rarefied form, and not a liquid form. So the job of the fuel injector is to atomize the fuel. When the fuel gets broken down into small particles, it then inherently, by being sprayed into the atmosphere, gets mixed with air. All right, so that's the emulsification. In a carburetor, the atomization and emulsification happens in the carburetor. That's why a carburetor has what they call emulsion tubes in it, and they have air bleeds. All right, so but an injector is a little bit different. So all we're doing is it's a very, very controlled aerosol can. So it's breaking this fuel apart, it's mixing with air, and then through heat, which is called the latent mean unseen, heat of vaporization, the fuel will turn into a vapor, will rarefy, turn into a gaseous form, and no longer be a liquid. So the job of the fuel injector is to very efficiently atomize the fuel. And if it atomizes the fuel very efficiently, then the emulsification process could take place. Now think about it this way. When you go in the field to spray, and depending upon what you're spraying in your crop ground, you're going to change the nozzle, the tip, whatever you want to call it. Some people call it a tip, some people call it a nozzle. All right, you're going to change the tip to get the desired, not only the desired pattern that you want, but the desired droplet size. So if you're worried about, let's say you're spraying dicamba, and you're worried about drift, then you want to have a larger droplet, which would be heavier due to the specific gravity of the product that you're spraying that's in the tank. It would be heavier and be less prone to drift. If you want something that's going to get a lot of coverage, let's say you're spraying a fungicide or you're trying to kill a cover crop off, right? You are concerned with drift, obviously, but you want to be able to get a lot of penetration. You want to basically almost fog that crop so that you want nice little droplets to go on to the leaves. And if it's a fungicide, you want to be able to cover that crop very, very well, because as it's told to me, and I'm no agronomist, I would say, is that specifically with a fungicide, you need to be able to get good coverage so that product works, not just on a couple of leaves. And the same thing if you're trying to kill something with a weed killer, a herbicide, you want to be able to get coverage in that plant so it could translocate into that plant and it could effectively kill not the plant itself, not the leaves, but already got tongue tied there as usual. But so you understand, have a basic exposure as far as a sprayer tip is concerned about the need to have a different pattern. All right, now on an engine, the job of the electronic fuel injector is to make a nice, fine, small droplet pattern. And it needs to be able to, the shape of the pattern is going to be dependent upon the design of the engine and where the injector is located. Because if you have a lot of little droplets, then you have a lot of surface area. And the surface area is going to interact with the oxygen, and that is going to be the emulsification process. So if you have, let's say, 100 small droplets versus 10 large droplets of gasoline coming into the coming into the cylinder, then you will have better emulsification, because the 100 small droplets have more surface area exposed to oxygen, to air, which is oxygen and nitrogen and 2% other gases, and it will emulsify. It is the inverse of what you want to do with a sprayer as far as drift is concerned. We want big droplets so you don't have a lot of surface area and it's heavy to pull down into the crop, whereas with gasoline coming into an injector, you want the surface area for better emulsification. And then if you get better emulsification, you will have better phase change through the latent heat of vaporization, because each molecule of gasoline will have not only more surface area, but be more exposed to the heat, so it will vaporize quicker. All right? Does that make sense? Not that I can hear you, but hopefully it does. All right? So to get the most efficient conversion of the fuel to potential energy, gasoline for the cylinder, you need to have a very fine atomization. You need to have a very good emulsification, and then the phase change happens through heat, which is by the law of nature. But if you do not have good atomization and good emulsification, then the phase change does not occur efficiently. And when it does not occur efficiently, you have an engine that does not run properly. Alrighty? Now, the same thing happens, I'll jump to diesel for a minute, is that if you have a diesel, and we'll first talk with a mechanical injector, if you have an old pump line nozzle system, the job of that injector was to atomize that fuel. And the better it atomized that fuel and had a nice spray pattern, the same thing would happen, because you would have more emulsification, and then you would have more contact with the heat in the cylinder, because it's going to need to auto combust. If you don't allow it to have the contact with the heat and have small molecules, it cannot auto combust. It will take more time for it to auto combust, which is what we call delay. Alrighty? So the premise is the same. It's a lot like, you know, seed to soil contact is important, whether you're growing soybeans or growing corn or growing wheat or growing tomato plants. But, you know, some of the dynamics are a little bit different, the way the crop interacts with the soil and with the nitrogen and with the atmosphere, and the same thing happens with gas and diesel, but the core, the foundation, is the same. So now, what will happen, going back to gasoline, is that the injector has what is called a rise time. And the rise time also works with something called the dynamic flow range, and it's abbreviated DFR. And this is on an electronic injector we're talking about. And this could be the same thing for common rail diesel, because that basically copies or mimics a gasoline injector, albeit at higher pressure, but it mimics the function of a gasoline injector. So common rail diesel or gasoline. And when I say gasoline engine, it could be on your car, your pickup truck, if you have a UTV that's fuel injected, motorcycle, irrigation pump motor, makes no difference. So the injector has no idea what it's in. Right? So the rise time is how quickly the magnetics are built in the injector, and the magnetic field is created, and the pintle is lifted up. Now, the pintle, when the pintle lifts up off the seat, and I'm going to use the term pintle, there are plate injectors that have a disc in it, there's ball and seat injectors, but we're going to use the term pintle, and it all functions the same. Basically, it's closing off the orifice. So the pintle looks like a little, like a needle valve in a carburetor. And this, when this moves up, out, off its seat, when it's on the seat, the injector does not flow fuel. When it moves up, it starts to flow fuel. But what will happen is that there is the rise time, and the rise time and the dynamic flow range work hand in hand. So what happens is that as the pintle moves away from the seat, the further it moves away from the seat, the more unshrouded the orifice that passes the gasoline is, and the better the atomization of the fuel, and the more accurate the atomization of the fuel. As the pintle just starts to move up off the seat, it does not do a good job of atomizing the fuel. It actually starts to drip it a little bit. So the thing is that you want to get up that pintle up very quickly, and you want to have that unshrouded orifice in the injector to do a good job of breaking that fuel apart, which is called, as I said, atomization. Now, what has been quantified through injector design is that at one particular point in the movement of that pintle, now the pintle moves, you could hardly detect the movement on it, but that's the ticking sound you hear, tick, 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 when a fuel-injected engine is running. It's the pintle opening and closing and hitting against the seat. But, and I'm going to exaggerate the numbers. So let's say that the pintle moves 1 inch, which is, it doesn't move 1 inch, but let's say it moves 1 inch, right? And then at a tenth of an inch, it's doing a very poor job of atomizing the fuel, almost dripping it, like turning on a faucet. When you first turn it on, it starts to drip before it has a flow. And then let's say at a quarter of an inch, all right, it starts to do a decent job of atomizing the fuel. And then from the quarter of an inch up to 1 inch, it does a good job. But as the Pinto moves away further from the seat, then it flows more fuel. So you would say that the dynamic flow range on that injector is between a quarter of an inch to 1 inch of travel on the Pinto, because the quarter of an inch is when it started to get a nice atomized spray pattern, and prior to that, it was first dripping a little bit, maybe one drip, and then came a little bit better, and then dribbled, and then went into a spray pattern. So for that injector, you would say that 250 thousandths of an inch, a quarter of an inch, is where the dynamic flow range starts. Okay, and the thing is that the rise time, how quickly the magnetics build and how quickly it can get there, to that dynamic flow range, works hand in hand. So the injector that has a quicker rise time will enter a dynamic flow range sooner and on its opening signal, and it will basically do a better job of atomizing the fuel. Now, what happens is that inside the engine, you're burning fuel, which, as I said a few minutes ago, is hydrocarbon-based. And a hydrocarbon-based fuel will always have some residual after combustion left, and the hydrogen will be burned off, and the carbon will remain. Some carbon deposits will remain. So the idea of why it is so important to keep the injectors clean, and the way you could do this by putting an additive in the fuel tank, is that once you build carbon deposits on that pintle of the injector, is that the not only is the atomization become poorer, just like a dirty tip on a sprayer, right? If you go and you spray in a field and you happen to drop into a hole or something like that, and the boom hits the ground, and you put some dirt in the orifice of the spray tip, what's going to happen? That thing is going to be shooting to the side, it's going to be dribbling, it's going to be spraying off at an angle, it doesn't have a nice conical spray pattern anymore. Well, that's what happens to a fuel injector, be gasoline or diesel. Once you basically get carbon deposits on there formed, it is going to skew the atomization process of that injector. It's going to skew the atomization of the fuel, and in turn, what's basically going to happen is that the as-engineered dynamic flow range, and our when we talk about the quarter of an inch travel, is now not going to be valid, because you may need to move the Pinto a half inch to get it to flow, to atomize some fuel, because of the carbon deposits formed on the Pinto. So the carbon deposits on the Pinto basically, in very simplistic terms, impact the atomization of the fuel, and at one particular point can make it so bad that it's hardly atomizing and spraying as a stream. So it impacts the atomization of the fuel, and it impacts at what rise time, how long it takes for it to get to the dynamic flow range. Now, where will this show itself? It'll show itself on first place. It usually shows itself, depending upon the application, is idle quality. The idle is not as stable as it used to be. Alrighty, so it could be a cold start hesitation. Usually, this is gasoline. Usually, the engine would start, but it may be a little bit bulky. May not want to take the throttle. May want to buck a little bit on cold driveway. All right, you obviously would show it in an emissions test. All right, and in some instances, you may even get a check engine light on, depending how bad the problem is. All right, so keep in mind that with that injector, Pinto gets dirty, is that atomization process will be impacted, and once you do not, that's just like having good seed to soil contact. All right, if you don't have good seed to soil contact, that's why I have Keaton seed firmers on my planters, like a lot of you guys have some sort of seed firmer, maybe a different brand, but you know that you need to close that trench. You need to have good seed to soil contact, and you need to be able to transfer that moisture moisture from that soil into that seed. If that seed is hairpinned or it's sitting in an air gap or sitting on a stone, you're not going to get that seed to soil contact. You're not going to get that heat and that moisture transfer for that seed to germinate. Same thing happens. You get dirty pintles on an injector. The fact of the matter is that you're not going to get the atomization. That's your seed to soil contact. And once you don't have the atomization, all bets are off on what's going to happen to emulsification, and all bets are off on what's going to happen to the phase change from a liquid to a gaseous state, the vaporization of the fuel, and not the because of poor atomization. Same thing planting, you're planting a crop in the ground, right? You need to have that foundation there. So the injector gets dirty, and the injector gets dirty from carbon, which is the residual byproduct of the gasoline being consumed. And the same thing happens with a diesel. Right, now let's jump to diesel for a minute. Basically, in essence, what I said for gasoline pertains 99% to a Tier 4 type of system with a common rail injection, which is an electrical injector for each cylinder, right? Same basic function. If you go back to a pump line nozzle, mechanical diesel system, all right, instead of the rise time, what they would call is the pop open pressure. And you would be able to take those injectors apart and put them on a test bench and then see what pressure each injector opens at. A nozzle, some people call it a nozzle. Of course, it's the whole unit, not the injector. We'll call it an injector for simplicity's sake here. All right. So the thing is that, so every manufacturer will have a specification. They'll say, okay, 1,800, make you up a number, 1,800 PSI for pop open pressure. And then, depending upon the injector style and design, you may shim it. There's a spring in there. You may shim the spring, or it may have an adjustment screw, all right, with a lock nut on or what have you. So now, if you basically have, so a good pump and nozzle man, when he does your injectors, your diesel injectors, mechanical system, right, he's going to set those, say, okay, I'm going to set these all at 2,000 PSI pop open pressure. Alrighty, so you want to set them for 2,000 PSI pop open. So this for each one, every cylinder is popping open at the same time and giving a fuel event at the same time in the crank angle of rotation. Alright, now we didn't discuss this with the gasoline injector, but we're going to go back and forth also, is that on both a gasoline injector when you bench test it and a pump line nozzle injector or a diesel Tier 4 type of a common rail system, is not only you concerned with how it opens and sprays fuel, but you're concerned with how it closes. So when the injector gets dirty and builds carbon deposits on there, that's like a leaky faucet in a sink. So even though the command is to close it, even though in the mechanical system the pressure went away and it's supposed to be spring-loaded closed, if it has a lot of carbon on it, that injector is going to start to drip when it's closed. And that's going to skew up the fuel delivery, because it's going to be dripping fuel depending upon its location. Could be a direct injection diesel, could be indirect injection, it could be a port fuel injection system, or it could be a direct injection gasoline engine. It's going to be dripping fuel when it's not supposed to. It's the leaky faucet in the sink. So we have to, and historically, this is all from carbon deposits and varnish gunk from the fuel and from the burning process, all right? So, getting back to the mechanical diesel, we have the pop-open pressure, we have closing. We don't want the injector to bounce on closing, and we want it, when it closes, we want it to seal and not drip, all right? And then, though they really don't and call it a dynamic flow range on a diesel mechanical injector, there is amount of movement that has to happen before you get a nice spray pad and nice atomization. And then if you have carbon on the tip, basically, in essence, all of this is off. All right, so you're going to have carbon on there, and the spray pattern is not going to be right. The atomization is not going to be right. Gasoline, worried about emulsification. Diesel, worried about emulsification, but you're worried about exposing the small molecules of the liquid fuel to the heat source in the cylinder so that it responds quicker and vaporizes and burns. All right, so all of this is based upon dirt, carbon. When I mean dirt, I mean dirt from the fuel filter, carbon deposits on the injector, on the pintle, and then throughout the injector, making it lazy. All right, so now that's one thing. And let's go to the other part of carbon. Go back to gasoline. All right, there's something called IVD intake valve deposits and CCD combustion chamber deposits. The gasoline, all right, will actually build carbon deposits on the valve, and this will happen on the intake valve. And what will occur is that the carbon deposits will actually tent up on the intake valve from the backside of the valve to the stem, and it will drastically restrict airflow into the engine. There's a basic mathematical equation which you listening to this, I don't expect you to remember it, but it's airflow, all right, at 28 inches times 0.0257 times the number of cylinders, and that gives you the airflow potential for horsepower. If you have an intake valve that has a lot of carbon on it and it's tented up, what's going to happen? Same thing with a valve. They call it unshrouding dynamic flow range. That valve has to open up so far in the head for it to start the flow. But once you've basically loaded this valve up with carbon, is you effectively made the valve size and the intake port much smaller. And this engine becomes, has no power, has idle instability problems, has cold start issues, has cold start drivability problems, all right, and also skews the mixture, because as the fuel injector is spraying onto the valve, right, the carbon actually wicks in the fuel, and then so the engine is actually lean at idle and low velocities, low intake port velocity, then at higher engine RPM, what it does is that it has a chance to try to break the fuel up and not let it wick into the carbon, and then the carbon actually gives up the thing of it of a wet sponge, that the carbon is all wet with gasoline from when the engine is idling, and then as the high airflow, think of like you're drying grain in a bin, the high airflow pulls the gasoline out of the carbon and enriches the mixture. So now you have an engine that's too lean at idle and part throttle light load and too rich at cruise and high speed, because the carbon is giving up the wicked in fuel. And this is all based upon deposits forming on the intake valve. Now on a pump line nozzle diesel, what you will do is that you will build deposits more on the piston crown than on the intake valve, because even if it's an indirect injection diesel, the fuel is introduced after the intake valve, and if it is a direct injection diesel, it is introduced right into the combustion chamber. And the only time that the intake valve would really be exposed to any fuel is during overlap of the cam. So it can build some deposits there, but the deposits were basically formed on the crown of the piston. And when deposits form on the crown of a piston, over time, they will actually get baked and they will become rock hard. First, both gasoline and diesel engines, the carbon deposits are first soft. And those are called soft deposits. And that's why years ago, your father or your grandfather said, get it out on the highway on the two lane and whack it to the floor and blow out all the carbon from it. All right, and you'd see all the black smoke coming out of the tailpipe or something, or you're on a two-lane, somebody passes and you hear them whack the throttle, and then you see all the puff of black smoke comes out, and what have you, and that's the carbon deposits that are still soft on the piston crown, that CCD, called combustion chamber deposits. And then there's IVD, which historically do not get blown out because it doesn't have the heat there and the velocity of the in-charge motion. So now, same thing happens with the diesel. You start to build a lot of carbon deposits. It's going, when that injector sprays fuel, it's going to wick in. It's going to wick in that fuel, and then at idle, store it, and then at higher RPM, give some up. But that's the gasoline engine is very, very susceptible to that, because what will happen is that the deposits will form on the valve before it forms in the combustion chamber. And it will still, so you have IVD intake valve deposits on the gasoline engine, CCD on the piston crown. On a diesel, you have minimal IVD intake valve deposits, but you have the ability to build a lot of carbon deposits on the crown of the piston and affect the way the engine runs, because in essence it is not getting the full fuel load. There's what is called the delivered air fuel ratio and the created air fuel ratio. The created air fuel ratio is what is coming out of the injector that is the ideal. So just like saying, if you want to raise 300 bushel per acre corn, you got to put so much N, so much P, so much K. So that is what you're delivering, all right? And then the created air fuel ratio is I may have that backwards. Basically, in essence, let me just correct that, because I don't want to, if I said it wrong, there's no way for me to go back and listen to this, all right? You're creating the air fuel ratio at the injector. So that is the created air fuel ratio. The delivered air fuel ratio is what gets to the cylinder. So if you have a lot of IVD intake valve deposits, the injector will create the proper air fuel ratio, but the cylinder will never be getting that. So it'll never be delivered. So it'd be just like saying, well, my planter is set, like we plant sweet corn 28-inch rows, 20,400 seeds per acre. So my seed meter is set for 20,400 seeds per acre. But if those seeds are not getting in the ground, then I'm not going to have 20,400 plants per acre. So I created that, but I did not deliver that. All right, so that's what this is all about. And the fact of the matter is that you cannot stop this from happening. As far as gasoline is concerned, all right, how you could help it is by using a gasoline that has a higher level of detergent in and also has a chemical composition. It's called a top-tier gasoline that has a less of a propensity due to its chemical composition to build carbon deposits. It also has a higher level of detergent. So there's two components there. It's the gasoline's propensity to build deposits, and then a detergent to remove the deposits that are there. A top-tier gasoline has, people don't understand, they think it's just detergent. It's less of a propensity to build deposits, and then also has, I'll call it soap in layperson's terms, to be able to remove deposits that have already formed. Because just like brushing your teeth, it's going to get dirty no matter what. Alrighty? Now, if you don't have a top-tier gasoline that's available, then all you need to do is add a fuel systems cleaner into your gasoline as part of your preventive maintenance. And I've spoken about this in previous shows, and there are a lot of good products, but you want something that's going to not just be an injector cleaner. Right, you want something that's gonna clean the intake valve, the IVD, and the CCD, and the injector. So it has to be a product that says cleans the injector, removes intake valve deposits, and combustion chamber deposits. If it's just a pure injector cleaner, all it's doing is working on the pintle of the injector and removing the carbon from that. All right, now, on a gasoline direct injection engine, which a lot of engines have today on the farm and your personal vehicles or your farm truck, there's a little bit different dynamics, because you are not spraying on the intake valve, you're spraying into the cylinders, and that valve still builds deposits from overlap of the cam, and that's why a lot of engines today are both direct injection and poor fuel injection. The F-150 that I just tested, first ever farmer road test, it's up on my website, all right, was both direct GDI, gasoline direct injection, and port injection. And the industry is going to that because they're finding that there's no way for them to clean the deposits off the valve, and it's the standoff of the fuel during overlap that's actually going and causing those deposits mixed in with any. That's why those engines require a special oil, because they have to be a very, very extremely low sulfur oil so that it does not build deposits. But I don't think it's sulfur, excuse me, it's potassium, low potassium oil. But that's why they have, like General Motors says, the Dexos oil, is that it's an oil that's going to work better with a gasoline direct injection engine. And then So that's what you need to do on a diesel. What you basically need to do is have a product. I've spoken a lot about additives in fuel, and you know, additives in fuel like N, P, and K in crop production. It's basic nutrition. This is basic dynamics, because if you get that injector dirty on the diesel, you get it on the gas, then all bets are off the way the engine runs. On the Tier 4 diesel, you're going to affect your diesel particulate filter and how often it has to go through a regen process, because if you're not atomizing the fuel properly, and it's not going to emulsify, and it's not going to vaporize properly, you're going to build a lot of carbon. The diesel particulate filter is going to store that carbon, and then the regen process needs to be invoked to take that carbon and turn it to ash. Same thing is going to happen. If you don't, you'll build a lot of carbon in the EGR system on the late model Tier 4 diesel, which will give you a lot of service problems, drivability problems down the road. And also, because you will not have an efficient combustion event, you could actually have, depending upon when the combustion event goes bad on you, is that you could have a higher level of SCR, of diesel exhaust fluid use, or a lower level, which is not good either, because then you're not getting rid of those oxides and nitrogen emissions. So the thing is that I just got to excuse me, I had to pause there because I was going to cough. But look, we understand now rise time, dynamic flow range, closing, no dripping, atomization of the fuel. This is all for both gasoline and diesel. Very, very simple. Treat your fuel with some sort of cleaner. And, you know, this is specific. Also, you have a fuel-injected UTV engine. Those are very prone to building intake valve deposits, because what happens is historically they use for very short duty cycles, and there's residual hydrocarbons on the valve when you shut the engine off and in the cylinder, and if the valve is open, it reverts backwards and gets the valve wet, and over time builds deposits. But it is very, very important. Tier 4 engine, you will have the minimum amount of issues with a Tier 4 system if that injector is kept clean and is able to atomize the fuel properly. It's as simple as that. You don't need to overthink it. And now, as always, if you have any questions or any comments, please feel free to contact me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. And now we're ready for our special delivery, and that is brought to you by Firestone Ag, a company founded by Harvey Firestone, a fourth-generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. Harvey dreamed of putting rubber tires on farm tractors, and his innovative mindset is the core of Firestone Ag today, and lives on with their 23-degree tread bar, AD2 technology, that's the IF and VF tires, great, great tires, made in Des Moines, Iowa, large factory there, beautiful, a lot of farmers work there, and their new replacement track, the Firestone of tracks. You have a track machine, the tracks are worn, check out those Firestone tracks, they are killer. State-of-the-art replacement track, regardless of what brand track you had on the machine before. The soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. And I actually have a letter that came to me through Successful Farming. As you all know, I work with Successful Farming and contribute to their magazine, and I am the engine man on their TV show. And we have a great working relationship. We go back and forth, and this particular gentleman contacted me through Successful Farming, and his name is Robert Sauter. He had a very simple question. He has a Massey Harris 44 tractor, and he says that the PTO output, the PTO on the tractor is about 3 feet off the ground. And if he wants to hook up something, he didn't say what he wants to hook up, it's a really very steep angle. And he wanted to know whether he should have a PTO shaft for those applications with a CV joint. Yes, 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 Mr. Sauter, you are dead on the money. When I was reading your little note, I was saying CV joint, and then he asked me at the end of his question whether he should have a PTO shaft with a CV joint. And as we know, CV stands for constant velocity. and versus a regular universal type of joint, all right, that has a crossbar in it, the CV joint has balls in it. And why it's called constant velocity is that when you have a steep angle on a tie bar type of universal joint, we'll say a standard universal joint, what happens is the PTO shaft or the drive shaft on a car or truck, what have you, will actually swing in an ellipse. And that's why it vibrates, because it's not going in a circle, it swings in an ellipse, so it's like egg-shaped. And because it's swinging in an ellipse, it accelerates and deaccelerates in its arc of rotation. So even though the shaft is coming out, the PTO shaft is spinning 540 RPM out of the tractor, what's happening is that that motion is transferred to this joint, and it's on a steep angle. It actually goes in an egg shape in the ellipse form. And in that ellipse form, it accelerates and deaccelerates, and that's what gives you the harmonics and gives you that vibration. If you probably can't have a drive shaft or PTO shift of more than about a 3 or 4 angle degree before you start to introduce what we would call a harmonic in engineering, a vibration, and that's not good for anything. It's not good for the input of the tractor, or the output, the PTO shift, because you're putting that harmonic back into that shift, into that transmission and into that bearing, and the same thing is happening whatever is being driven. That harmonic is being absorbed into something, whether, let's say, it's a rotary cutter or whatever it is, a hydraulic pump, and you're putting that shaking, that harmonic into it, and it's eventually going to beat that thing to death. So because of the balls that are in the constant velocity joint, what happens, it gives it, it's able to turn and rotate on the balls, and those balls allow it to work at a much steeper angle and keep the velocity the same throughout the arc of rotation. So that's really what constant velocity means, is that it's going to keep the velocity, the input of to the joint and the output of the joint, right? So before the pivot point and after the pivot point are going to remain constant, and that is it's not going to turn in an ellipse. So yes, Mr. Slaughter, thank you very much. And for contacting me, greatly appreciated. And if you get and that's why if you look at also most new equipment has a constant velocity joint, it gives you more flexibility as far as the angle is concerned, and also it reduces, even if you have a regular traditional type of PTO shaft that has a crossbar joint and a universal joint, there's a certain amount of harmonics, even when the angle is perfect, that are going to be transferred. You may not feel it on the tractor or in the machine, but the bearing will feel it, and the CV joint is much smoother that way. So thank you so much, and hopefully that answered your question. If not, just contact me again, either through Successful Farming or Hot Rod Farmer at farmmachinerydigest.com. So listen, I want to thank you for listening, and I greatly appreciate, as I said in the beginning, of your time. Check out that Agro Expo, and just know that the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved America. You have a great week, and God willing, tune in next week on Quick Hits. Bye-bye.